Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So, Diesel, this has turned into be a fascinating conversation. If people want to continue, they can hit us up on the text line at 71307. They can hit us on Twitter at ESPN Upstate, me at Sturgis Sports, you at Diesel on Radio.
Yeah, the truth is, this is an issue that is pervasive throughout college football. And, you know, right now, Clemson fans, you may feel like you're immune to it because you're winning national titles. And I think it's going to insulate you a little longer against this trend. But, man, it's coming. It's coming. And every single state, the national average is down 1,400 fans per game. That's the everybody is losing 14. That means some are losing 5 and some are losing 3,000 a game. I mean, that is massive. If you're, I don't know, if you're Ohio University, if you're Toledo, if you're somebody in the, if you're Texas State who can't afford to lose 3,000 fans, they're losing 3,000 fans every single game.
So I can hear, we've heard various issues from how expensive it is to our last caller that we had right before the break, said, what about water? Back in the day, there was hardly a game that I sat in the stands that I did not, in September, a noon kickoff game in September in the South ought to be outlawed. I mean, it was one thing at 1 o'clock, but at least you knew it was 1 o'clock when you were growing up, because otherwise it was a 3:30 kickoff maybe once a year. Every other home game in Clemson would be 1 p.m. Maybe you got yourself conditioned for it. But with this, announcing what 4 weeks ahead of time, everybody has their hands out. Number one, it's hard to make plans when you don't know when the kickoff is. That has to have a little bit of effect, Diesel, right?
Absolutely. You got a lot of colleges who have sold out their fan base to chase the almighty television dollar. And, especially in the South, when, you got presidents and ADs who sit in nice air-conditioned boxes and, they are sitting in the lap of luxury every single game. It's easy to say, sure, let's do a 1 o'clock kickoff and make another $500,000 off of it or whatever the price may be. And damn the consequences. But what happens when you're the athletic director who says, we're going to have a noon game at the end of September in Mississippi, and then you got a fan who dies because of heat stroke? That is on you, athletic director. That fan death is on you.
Or the conference, if they dictate it.
No, I'm...
Because you can't fight the conference.
You certainly could. It's not going to work.
Not with the amount of money they're getting off the SEC network and everything else. But that's a justified, comment. I would say this much. First of all, eliminate water sales at the stadium. Have your corporate department go out in your sales department, whether it's IPTE at Clemson, Gamecock Club, whatever, Spurs and Feathers Club, Tar Heel Club. Have a corporate sponsor for bottles of water every week. Now you got Hall of Fame Day, you got IPTE Day, you've got, Homecoming, you've got Veterans Day, Military Appreciation Day. So they've themed every single football game with something as to make it an experience, maybe even for only a limited amount of people. Military Appreciation shouldn't be limited, but you know what I'm saying. So don't put water for sale up on the concession board. Have a corporate sponsor, like you said during the break, print out 15,000 labels for a bottle of water, however many, and put their logo on it. The corporate sponsors get the good publicity for handing out free water. The university still makes the money for selling the sponsorship, and you don't have to pay $4 or $5 for a bottle of Aquafina.
I get it, and hey, this is going to be me sounding like a liberal, but personally, I think it's morally wrong to charge somebody $6 or $7 for a bottle of water in an enclosed environment where you can't leave, Clemson notwithstanding, because fans can leave at Clemson, but most stadiums you can't. in the middle of, you know, September heat.
Well, it's going to be interesting, and you can continue to get in with us when it comes to that. Here in the next segment, we're going to talk with Jim Hart from AP Radio. Major League Baseball All-Star Game tonight at 7:30. We begin coverage at 7 p.m. And listen, I guess real quickly before we go to Delvin, who I want to thanks for calling back in because he wants to talk Major League Baseball. At what point do people bring – Diesel, I say this with 100% honesty. At what point do you hear people going, these are state schools that are, like, altering their stadiums to benefit the wealthy? If they're going to make these improvements, they need to make them for the entire stadium, not make it for, you know, the more wealthy. I'm serious. That comment will come up at some point in time, the way things are going right now. And let me tell you, professional athletes here in the next few years, you're going to be under the gun as well. Delvin, Major League Baseball, thanks for getting back in with us, bud.
Yeah, no problem. Well, before I get to baseball, first of all, the reason I called out Tyler Butler is because that's what Bragg was talking about. He was the best in the business there. He got the scoop more than anybody. So that's why I called him out on it.
Hey, 90% is not bad when it comes to projecting what the decisions and thoughts of professional athletes, my God, even high school athletes, you know what I mean? I'll give you an example yesterday, Delvin. Everybody I know that covers the Gamecocks thought Miles Murphy from North Carolina was going to commit to USC. I mean, it was 100% across the board. Nope, he pulled the trigger for the Tar Heels yesterday.
Yeah. But basically, I want to get your take. What do you think about Justin Freeland's comments about the ball being juiced? I think that's just somebody being bitter because a lot of players are hitting home runs off of him.
I think it's not just Justin Verlander. I think it's across the board that pitchers know. They know the feel of that ball. They say the stitches have been lowered. It's a harder ball. And I do think, Delvin, Major League Baseball is somehow complicit in this, you know what I mean? I don't think that there's the steroid. I think there are some guys that probably know how to defeat the system. And when they get caught, they pay the price for it. Major League Baseball probably treats juicing harder than any other league out there. But, I mean, my God, some of the stuff we've seen this year, I get it. Justin Verlander's getting older. He's starting as you get older, you get hit harder. But there's something going on because across the board, pitchers are like, this is not the same baseball we've had.
Yeah, and then Manfred came out and denied it. So
well, I don't believe a dadgum thing Manfred said because he sat there, Delvin, a couple of weeks ago with a look on his face being serious about, you know, a company that you bought that's been making your big – the bat's not the biggest thing that you need. You can have a bat, but if you don't have a ball, you're not playing a game. You can get by with playing a game with no glove, but if you don't have a ball, you can't play the game. So they are complicit in this. And for him to go, oh, we haven't done anything different right now, the numbers don't support it. But this is why, Delvin, I think Major League Baseball has to be very, very careful about expansion. Because, you know, we just heard right-sizing. I think Major League Baseball pitching staffs have been watered down with this many teams in the league.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but I can't wait for the All-Star game. Now it's going to be a good game. And all I want to say, Ronald Acuña didn't he made a good swing of himself last night. Man, I thought he was going to lose to Josh Bell, but he beat him, though.
Yeah, listen, thank you. We'll be talking Braves and Home Run Derby and all with Jim Hart coming up, Delvin. I appreciate you getting in with us. But, I mean, it was great to see Acuña, that young guy in there, and he did well, but he did lose to the eventual champion, in the semifinals, and that was Pete Alonso of the New York Mets. Now, think about this, Diesel. It was a good night for both of those guys. Number one, when their contract's ready to be renegotiated and they continue to play well and find themselves in all-star games, they're going to be rewarded handsomely, no doubt about it. But for this year, oh, man, they're only making $550,000 as rookies. Do you realize Pete Alonso winning $1 million last night as the champion of the Home Run Derby is actually more money he will make as an entire year in Major League Baseball this year? You think that was a pretty special night for that young man? I mean, dude, sign me up for making $500,000 a year any day of the week, twice on Sunday, three times every month, however you want to word it. But to get a bonus that's bigger than a half a million dollars, man, that's just absolutely next level. You want to talk about winner, winner, chicken dinner, there you go. But in my opinion, for the first time, I walked away from one of these skills challenges going, dude, that was cool. Because those guys earned their money. I mean, they were both huffing and puffing. I heard people being critical of the coverage last night, saying, thank God Chris Berman hung it up, because can you imagine how many times we would have heard back. Dude, there's no way to humanly broadcast that. They are throwing the ball on the next pitch before the previous previous ball's landed. They are literally into the next pitch before you know if it's a home run or not. What I was more fascinated than anything when it came to last night is it kept track of all their swings and where the ball ended up, man. And let me tell you something. Ronald Acuna Jr. sprayed that ball all over the field. It was fairly impressive. But the one Atlanta Brave that I want to ask this to Jim Hart. Ronald Acuna Jr. was the first Brave in a long, long time. I don't even know the name of the last one. I apologize. But Ronald Acuna Jr. was the first Atlanta Brave to advance out of the first round of a home run derby in a long time. There are two pros that I thought about last night, former pros, retired pros, for two various reasons that I would love to see compete in a Major League Baseball home run derby contest. Number one was Dave Kingman. Played with the Cubs first base, played with the Braves, with the Mets first base. Diesel, he was the original all or nothing hitter in Major League Baseball. He hit for the year on average somewhere in the 235, 240 range. But back before pre-juice days, he'd hit 40 home runs. So he could cool you off with a swing and a miss on an August day. He swung that hard. I would love to see what he could do with pitches being just lobbed up there like batting practice in a modern-day home run derby. The local one that I think would have a good shot at winning a home run derby if A, healthy, and B, he was in it, in today's modern age would have been former Atlanta Braves third baseman Bob Horner. And this is why. He had the most compact swing I've ever seen in Major League Baseball to have that much power. As a matter of fact, yesterday was the anniversary when he became, I think, the 10th major leaguer in history to hit four home runs in one baseball game. His swings on those four home runs were probably the swing distance of two today. His swing was that compact. So my point being, I don't think he would have overworked himself like these guys. I mean, it was coming at him fast and furious, and there was no doubt Vlad Guerrero was worn out at the end of the final stage. So when we come back, it's our buddy Jim Hart. He covers the Atlanta Braves for AP Radio. We got some Major League Baseball, some All-Star questions, some Braves questions, and what to look for in the back half of the season. After that, we will get into some UFC, some college football, and a whole lot more.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, it's the All-Star Game. It's the Home Run Derby. The Atlanta Braves are hot. People now considering them a contender for the World Series. Let's wait and see a little bit on that. But it's really an honor of media days next week when Jim Hart and I met for the first time like 12 years ago. Jim, hope you're doing well, bud.
Yeah, I'm doing well, Mark. Wow, it was 12 years ago. I'm feeling really old all of a sudden.
Yeah, it was something like that. It was actually down in Sawgrass in Jacksonville. You know, the ACC never said, we messed that place up so bad they never invited us back.
You know, the fans that are listening think they think that's kind of like a joke, but really, I mean, it's for real. The place was leveled after we got done.
Yeah, they said, screw it. We're going to go ahead and do our stadium renovation on the main TPC course, knowing that the ACC media couldn't tear it all up. But, Jim, listen, first of all, nothing in life is going to please 100% of the people all the time. Opinions are like backsides. Everyone's different. Give it whatever saying you want. But I actually thought the Home Run Derby last night was enjoyable. I could see why these guys are tired at the end of it with the time sections the way they are. But I see complaints this morning. Well, the guy that hit the third highest amount of home runs is the one that actually won it.
I think it's show. I tell you the truth, Mark, I went to the one in Atlanta back, I don't know how many years ago it was. I think it's kind of like wrestling. If you watch it on TV with the announcers and all the camera shots, it's really exciting and kind of neat. But when you go there and you're just watching, it's not quite as exciting. But I think it does make for great TV. And they definitely put on a show yesterday, Acuna, the whole crew.
You know, I maintain that when all is said and done, first of all, fans are some of the whiniest people on the face of this earth. We have a lot of longtime Braves fans up here in the upstate, as well as media throughout South Carolina and North Carolina, that continue to get after AA Alex Anthopoulos about, you need to find a closer. Well, guess what? A lot of teams are out there looking for closers. We don't know who's going on a fire sale yet, but I maintain when the end of this decade is done, that he may get the tip of the cap for the best decision by a GM in getting long-term Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies for roughly 50% of what the Philadelphia Phillies committed to Bryce Harper, and some of that's going to be on the backside of his career.
Barring injury, that will be an excellent move by Alex. It was a win-win with Acuna and Albies both getting financial security. And I didn't know where you were going with that when you were talking about the GM and deals. Would you believe, you know who was in the press box on Sunday scouting? Take a guess.
New York Yankees.
Frank Wren and his assistant, Bruce, I can't remember his name. He was the guy. So they were sitting there. So it's interesting you mentioned Acuna and Albies because Wren, of course, was the one that scouted and signed them. Back in the day, I think Anthopoulos, he's doing really well. I think that being a GM of a baseball team can be a car accident, though. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of good things, and then if you have one accident or one really bad trade or bad move, it can really stink up your career. But so far, so good for Alex. And let's not forget John Coppola. He's mm-hmm. the guy that really kind of planted all the seeds for a lot of this and ran on a couple things. It's not just one guy, Anthopoulos, has his hands on the wheel now. Really, the Braves have done a lot of good things, really good things, before Anthopoulos got there.
As we continue with Jim Hart, AP Radio covers the Braves and Major League Baseball. Jim, let me ask you this. I mean, we all saw Atlanta go further last year than any of us expected. We were hoping for the same, but they didn't really get into bidding wars like others did in the offseason. Yeah, this has a very 30-for-30 feeling. If I told you the Braves were up 6 games at the All-Star break playing some of their best ball, would you be surprised that that was the case this early in 2019?
I may be a little bit surprised, Mark, but I think they have so many very, very good young players, and it was like last year they overachieved because a lot of those young players – arrived and started being really productive. When you looked at the roster here with Acuna and Albies, the young pitchers they have, also, you know, then you've got guys like Austin Riley that are lurking in the AAA, down at AAA, and really it was a hard team really to be able to judge just exactly what they were going to do. But last year they overachieved so much with the younger players. I did think that there was a good chance that could happen again, and sure enough, it's happening. I mean, they've got some veterans that are producing, and they made some good off-season moves with Donaldson and McCann. But these young players are really – I mean, look at what Austin Riley has done. A guy batting six with that kind of power, I mean, you look at what he does, how it kind of sets up the rest of the back half of the lineup. What a huge impact he's made.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you're around the clubhouse or team more than any of us will ever be. You hear chatter as well there in the press box. Justin Verlander really took Major League Baseball to task for saying these balls are juiced. What are you hearing? Because, you know, pitchers are going to complain if things aren't 100%, but when this many are this consistent with the complaint, makes me wonder if, A, the balls aren't juiced, or, B, are we back to a steroid era?
I think that talking about the ball and being juiced, and I think when you read media reports about what Verlander said, it was kind of like he stepped across a line that, you know, kind of an area that people don't want to talk about. You really don't hear much in the clubhouse about that. It's just something the pitchers aren't going to, at least the Braves are really tight-lipped. They know where what to say, what not to say, but they're not going to mention about the pitchers aren't going to mention it, because then it's going to be their complaining and this and that. And of course the batters, they don't want to say it's a juice ball. It's all that off season weightlifting I've been doing and that new diet and that I'm getting to bed early, all those kind of things. So it's just not something that you hear too much, Mark, but it's sure a lot of fun to talk about it and figure out what the heck's going on.
Well, it's I think I started to think, first of all, Verlander's getting older. He's getting lit up. So guess what? If you got an excuse, use it. That's what we do as humans. But what really kind of shocked me was about 3 weeks ago, maybe been a month, when Rob Manfred came out and started talking about the stupidity of Rawlings not being able to get the pill in the center of the ball. They've been the manufacturer of Major League Baseball since 1977. So much that Major League Baseball went and bought them out. And you're telling me that in 2002, you can't get the center of the baseball in the center of the ball? I mean, come on. That was a whole lot about nothing.
Yeah, that was a whole lot about nothing. And let's face it, fans like home runs.
Yep.
The new regime of fans, the younger fans like a lot of action, a lot of home runs. I think the old-timers probably want to see a 2-1 game and be home in bed at 10 o'clock, but the excitement of the home run and it really does skew the game, because you look at a guy like Dansby Swanson, he'd be having a good year no matter what ball they were using. But my gosh,
40 homers?
What does he have now? 17 home runs, I believe, at the All-Star break. Who saw that coming?
Yeah,
Mark?
No, he's not a 40 home run guy. There's too many. I'm not so much worried about the upper end. It's just too many people are having years that you go, what? What? So that leads to number two, why look at expansion again, other than the fact that you can make more money, when you realize all that's going to do is just water down the pitching product that much more?
It is, and I think it kind of reminds me of when the Atlanta Thrashers hockey team were here in Atlanta. They went out and got a bunch of big defensemen, and then they changed the rules. And they got a bunch, then the rules favored small, quick defensemen. Right now, if you're a GM and you've got a team, you're building your team, and you got to know what kind of game you're playing. You know, are you playing a regular baseball game where, you know, a guy like Dansby is going to hit, you know, 12 home runs all year? Or is this, are we playing the juice ball and a guy like Dansby is going to hit 30 or 35? I'll tell you one thing that's helping the Braves a lot this year. That stadium that they're in right now, Mark, that's built for a power hitting team. And with that juice ball and with the players they've got, I mean, it really, to me, I think is a good thing for Atlanta right now.
All right, real quickly, last night, listen, I enjoyed, mano-a-mano going on and advancing, if you will, in the home run derby. But I could not help but think, I believe yesterday was the anniversary of when Bob Horner hit 4 home runs in old Fulton County Stadium, like the 11th Major League Baseball player to ever do it. But I was watching that video, and I was just, wow, look at that compact swing. Do you think even Bob Horner could – I mean, granted, he played a little bit on the bigger side. You know what I mean? He was a healthy man, no doubt about it. But two guys I think I would have loved to see in the modern-day home run derby were Bob Horner, because of that compact swing and how many he could hit, or Dave Kingman, because, you know, can no-hit curveball, me hit straight ball, can no-hit curveball, all Major League. You know what I mean?
Well, those two names you're pulling out, particularly Dave King, that's going back a ways.
Yeah, but it was either a strikeout or a home run for Dave Kingman.
You know, to show you how old I am, I remember watching Dave Kingman way back when he hit a home run in Chicago and they'd play the thing. But, I think those two, Bob Horner in particular, with that compact swing, he's a guy that could play right now. He's a guy that could play in any era. Just with that swing he had, and I wish my golf swing looked like that, short and compact instead of long and loopy. But that's something to think about. And then you think about Aaron and Ruth and all the power hitters over the years if they were here. Hey Mark, how about if back in the steroid era if they were using this ball, they'd be hitting the balls. I mean, they'd be hitting 700-foot home runs right now.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. What, 583 feet, longest ever hit? That was Mark McGwire off Randy Johnson in the old Seattle Kingdome?
I believe so, something like that. What a poke that was.
Of course,
that was in a dome stadium. There's another unnatural event.
There was probably a few PEDs, as we like to call them, involved in that matchup as well. All right, so six games up, the All-Star games tonight, lots of Braves playing. But what's coming up? Because here's the deal. You've got a six-game lead. The Nationals are playing well. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games, and you don't want to have that little nap coming out of the All-Star break. So what's up next for the Braves?
Well, I think, like you said, you want to jump right out. You're going to play Washington, I believe, a couple times pretty quick after the All-Star break. That's going to set the tone. You don't want to do any worse than break even with them. You don't want to give them any momentum or any confidence, Mark. But I think they definitely need to be reckoned with when you look at the pitching staff they've got. I think one thing that's going to watch with the Braves, with Mike Soroka, and with the other young pitcher whose name escapes me at the moment, they've thrown a lot of innings already this year, Max Fried. They've thrown a lot of innings this year, and I think they're going to have to rest them a fair amount in the second half. And who's going to step up into those innings for the Braves?
All right, buddy. Listen, next week when I'm sitting around a pool in Orlando, Florida, and everybody else is hearing the same coach speak that we've heard year after year after year, I'm going to text you a photo of my one frou-frou drink of the season, okay?
Yeah, please do, Mark. Can't wait.
All right, buddy. Listen, be good. Enjoy the second half and bring it home. If not, it's all your fault. All right, there's Jim Hart from AP Radio. Good dude. Like I said, literally diesel. Jim and I are right. He may have a couple of years on me, but 12 years ago, I showed up. I told you at my first ACC football kickoff, wide-eyed, whole nine yards. And he kind of looked at me. He goes, "You must be new." I was like, "Yep, this is my first one." He goes, "Yep, I felt like that 2 years ago." And we sat down, and we've been friends ever since. Literally the first guy I ever met in doing this crazy, crazy kind of job that we do. And now he's covering the Braves. I'm going to be covering the Panthers. And like I said, I will send him I will have my one pina colada of the summer down in Orlando. Speaking of the heat, you can bring it back. We'll reset. Send us your tweets. Send us text at 71307 of why you quit attending the games. But Diesel, our buddy Kevin McGwire with NBCSports.com has got a series out that we're going to hit on from time to time. He'll be coming back on with us here in the next week. But what were you doing the last time Notre Dame won a national championship in football? What was happening here in this country? Who was the president? What TV shows were cool? Because when I accused Notre Dame of being soft as Charmin in the Cotton Bowl last year, I meant it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Well, Sturge, how big can UFC get with their brand of ultra violence that they're selling right now?
To the point that people decide that that's not the morally correct thing to do.
Well, I can. That's a subjective answer. Let me give you an objective answer. Right now, we're in 2017, which is the most recent data I could find. UFC brought in $700 million, which is absolutely nothing to sneeze at. That is incredible for a sport that is built on violence to make that kind of money, that kind of sponsorship dollars. That's amazing. But that is an ocean away from what other major sports are making. The NFL, just by comparison, also in 2017 made $14 billion.
Well, that's also UFC MMA is new to the scene.
It is. It is. NFL is what, 85 years old? UFC is 26 years old. But UFC also has the privilege of coming up in the era of mass coverage. It is a major sport that has developed in the era of mass coverage. Soccer has existed forever. Basketball has existed for a long time. Football has existed for a long time when there was very limited coverage on each team. UFC was tailor-made for television coverage.
Have they had a big UFC event in which a participant has died? That would be because boxing has had a couple of deaths in the ring. No more so than Ray Ray Boom Boom Mancini but in his fight with Dooku Kim, I think it was, from South Korea.
What are they pulling names from, like Star Wars movies? Count Dooku?
Dooku Kim, one of those three, from South Korea. If you remember, Mancini beat him so bad he fell through the ropes and died the next day. That was sort of one of the downfalls of boxing, when you could witness somebody die live in the ring.
So what we're getting at is my new article, my new blog that's up on ESPNUpstate.com. Check it out. We've linked it up on the Facebook page and on the Twitter page. If you watched UFC 239, nobody's talking about the John Jones fight. John Jones is boring every single time he fights. It's dull. Nobody really cares. The Holly Holm and, I'm blanking on her name. I could see her face. That fight was a pretty entertaining fight over in the first round with Nunes. There we go. Nunes with a kick to the face. That was pretty exciting. But the really big thing that happened was the fight prior to that was Jorge Masvidal kneeing Ben Askren in the side of the head, in the temple, and knocking him out in the first 5 seconds. It is the fastest knockout in UFC history. I mean, really, the dude was knocked out in the first 2 seconds, but it took the referee actually calling the fight to call it a five-second knockout. And what I'm getting at in this article is that UFC, as most people know, is a brutal sport. It is violent. Yes, it is. UFC as a sport is okay with that brutality, is okay with that violence, and that's great. You know, I'm not admonishing anybody who likes the sport. I think it's a lot of fun. I'm not that into it, but I do watch it most of the time when it comes out, or every single UFC event, I watch most of them. But it is a sport that is based on brutality and violence. I'm thinking of things like Anderson Silva when his leg folded like a wet piece of paper, when Gary Goodridge just elbowed Paul Herrera into the mat at UFC 8. But the point is, can UFC grow much more beyond this $700 million a year size with that brand of brutality and violence? And should they be worried about that?
When we come back, let's discuss this. 844-GSP-ESPN, because one thing I think they can do that can hurt themselves is what I'm thinking of, and I'll bring it to you straight up. But you can hit us on the text line at 71307. We're live in the Health Air Studios. That's 844-GSP-ESPN.
UFC in 2017 was a $700 million a year business, which is incredible. You can't fault anybody for being able to bring a sport from nothing to $700 million a year in only 26 years. That's amazing. All the credit in the world to the previous presidents, to Dana White, to everybody involved with UFC. But how can UFC grow beyond that? And I personally believe that UFC will be a billion-dollar company within the next 5 years, but that is still massively far away from where the NFL and the other major sports are currently right now. And UFC wants to be on that level, but the problem is that right now, with its cult of violence, UFC is a cult sport. It is a gigantic cult sport, but can it get much bigger than this, you know, billion-dollar-a-year industry? And the question is, I'm not really sure, because I don't think a whole lot of people, the average American, has the stomach to take that kind of violence. They don't want to watch somebody getting their face kicked in on national television. It might be they might feel like the sport is below them. It doesn't interest them. Whatever it might be, UFC is a cult sport for people who like violence. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's your thing.
Dude,
but how can UFC get beyond that? You see it, people are going to say, there's no way UFC will ever get away from violence. That's what they do. Look at the NFL. The NFL was built on big hits. Remember the 90s?
They used to have videos.
The massive big hit videos. The NFL is getting as far away from that as they possibly
can.
They are massively embroiled in CTE scandals and issues. They are constantly coming out with new rules to increase player safety. They are constantly coming out with new equipment to increase player safety. So to say that it can't and won't happen in UFC is a little short-sighted. And I don't think it's going to happen in Dana White's era. It's going to happen with the next president. If the next president says, hey, we want to take this from a billion-dollar company to a $5 billion company, maybe we should sort of pare back the rules and bring it a little closer to boxing. And I'm not saying that that's the right thing. I'm not saying that's what UFC should do. The real question becomes, will UFC pare back the rules to become more palatable to more people, or will they double down on this violence to really sink in with the fan base, with the cult following fan base that they already have? And I, for one, think that they'll probably double down on this fan base and stick with them and not go away from that, which is probably the right decision.
Well, number one, one way to ruin it is continuing to come up with these oddball fights like possibly Tom Cruise versus Justin Bieber, because then people that have one eyebrow up about MMA are going, look, that's nothing more than sports entertainment, and that's effectively what wrestling is, not wrestling, in which they compete for medals in the Olympics. So that would be, make sure you're careful about that kind of stuff.
You're 100% right about that. And yes, I mean, how often leading up to the Mayweather-McGregor fight did you hear the national pundits, not the people who are already embroiled in the sport, the national pundits say, this is stupid.
Yep.
Guys, why are we into this? Max Kellerman on Stephen A. Smith's show, he is one of the biggest boxing heads in national sports, and he hated the idea. He couldn't stand the idea, said he wouldn't watch it. I don't know if he did or if he didn't, but the national media will not get behind a sport if it looks silly like that.
All right, Robbie G gets in with me. RobJob76 on Twitter says, one of the biggest UFC issues is how late the big-time cards come on. You're talking about 11:30, 12 a.m. before the main event starts. Well, fortunately, we only have, what, Eastern, Central, Mountain, and Pacific time zones. So that's a little bit of it, because you got, you know, the East Coast is going to pay for it being too late, or the West Coast is going to pay for it being too early. So there's a lot of truth in that. Number two, is that also at least a mask how many kids maybe potentially at 6, 7, 8 years old watching this in case there's a real bloody fight, you know, and that kind of thing. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you know, with the big fights happening out west in Vegas, I mean, people on the East Coast, fight fans at least, are staying up to watch it. I mean, I was up till 1 o'clock the other night watching the fights. So, I don't know. Like I said, it is for the hardcore cult audience, and they will stay up and watch it, and that's great. You tell us, are you a big time UFC fan? What do you think it'll take for UFC to grow exponentially beyond where they are right now? And I'm not talking about adding another, you know, $100 million in revenue every year. That's sponsorship.
How can you
they can
start
do
with
that.
Doubling and then go and five times higher. Number one, pay your employees. By that, I mean, what's the greatest thing that UFC has? They're fighters. So don't let them be tempted to go to one of these other organizations. You mentioned one of them to me. Oh, God. Name's escaping me. What the other company is in UFC or MMA. The other thing is be careful who you deal with when it comes to this sport. You want to watch something really fascinating. I believe it was 60 Minutes a couple of years ago that did a piece on Ramzan Kadyrov. Did I get credit for even attempting that and it even sounding somewhat normal? But Ramzan Kadyrov is the leader of the former Russian Republic Chechnya. They have made this their national sport. As a matter of fact, it has become big business over there. So make sure that you're dealing on equal grounds with somebody like that has a country involved in it, because it is their national sport. It is a big business, and where there is a big business in this stuff, Diesel, people are going to look to cheat. So, and it is a very fascinating piece. Again, just because I think I said it right, Ramzan Kadyrov. If not, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
We got a text here at 7-2-3-0-7-1-3-0-7, excuse me, said, Pride was much better. The five-minute rounds and constant stand-ups have caused me to lose interest. That coming from Clay on the text line. I'll take your word for it, Clay. I'm not a gigantic MMA fan. I am a casual MMA fan who sort of dips my toe in it whenever there's a UFC fight that I may have heard of one of the main guys. I mean, yeah, I take your word for it that Pride was better. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. I've yet to have that moment with UFC, with MMA. You know, that stopgap moment, if you will.
Stopgap moments are typically the most violent moments.
Right.
And most people are not going to want to watch that.
But by that, I mean, even when it comes to boxing, I have a couple of moments that I can go back and think to. All of us ordering at $39.95, thinking, good God, how much money is that for a Mike Tyson championship fight back in the day? I think Leon Spinks over 93 seconds. Also, I can tell you, Diesel, on my honeymoon, when Teresa and I got married, 22 years ago, we had gone to one of the parks in Orlando that day. We had a couple of bottles of champagne up in the room. We couldn't even watch the fight. We were getting the round-by-round updates on ESPN of Evander Holyfield with whoever he was fighting that night. Maybe Lennox Lewis, when the fan dropped into the ring with the fan man incident and all hell broke loose. I have a picture of me with an old Grateful Dead T-shirt with a bottle of champagne and a bag of Doritos at the Hyatt Grand Cypress Resort in Orlando. And, yes, both of us were checking in on that round-by-round update. So that's one thing I will always admit. I am old enough that I have a couple of moments that I remember when it comes to boxing. So, Clemson, some changes coming up around Death Valley. The Clemson basketball team playing for a gold medal tomorrow. Let's check in with Gary McDaniels from Clemson SportsNews.com when we come back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.